This program is devoted to those of you who are open to the realization that most everything around you is a myth, that it is fraudulent, that it is counterproductive, that almost all human institutions are working against your interest and are a sham, that your military is not protecting your freedom, but instead robbing you of it, that your justice system isn't just. It isn't the least bit fair. That your police are not protecting you. That your government isn't serving in your interest, but in fact against it. That your religion cannot save you. That all religions are an absolute fraud. I was driving last night talking, it came up that the Church of Scientology was prosecuted in Denmark for being a scam for economic corruption, for stealing people's money. So they were viewing the Church of Scientology as a criminal enterprise, and that it was producing nothing of value and yet taking people's money in the process, promising them that which they could not deliver. There was a local here in Central Virginia, one of the most prominent psychics, palm readers, card readers, a beautiful little house on a U.S. Highway going north of town, advertising her business as a palm reader and card reader, psychic. And they prosecuted her and successfully proved that she had confiscated millions of dollars from people. You know, and it's one of those things where you'd say, you know, some things just ought not be necessary to say. It shouldn't be necessary to say that a psychic is a complete fraud. Don't spend your money asking someone who is going to steal it from you, providing you no information of any kind that has any merit and is doing something that is wholly offensive to God, is not the best idea today. When you consider the mythology of the Church of Scientology, you would you don't think that you need to put a warning on the front door saying, if you go in here, you will be defrauded. You ought to be smart enough to know that. Well, I made the comment, I said, you know, all religion is a fraud. All religion is a criminal enterprise designed to rob people of their money, promising that which they cannot deliver. And this individual said, oh, you can't say that. That's not true. You know, all religion isn't corrupt. I said, oh, yeah, it is. They're all promoting a lie, and they're all engaged in taking people's money and promising that which they cannot deliver. It is a universal problem in our society. I was listening this morning to the news, and they were talking about Dr. Ben, the Republican candidate that has now outpaced Donald Trump for the Republican presidential nomination. And they were talking about how he was a very difficult candidate for Trump to try to deal with because he typically doesn't respond. He's a handsome-looking African-American man. He has a nice story of having been raised by a single mom in the suburbs of Detroit and having had it. Two of his relatives, nephews, nieces, cousins, killed in the crossfire there in Detroit. Mom was illiterate, and yet he managed, Carson did, to become a neurosurgeon. And now he's running for president, but he doesn't say much. And what he does say borderlies on insanity. You know, for example, he is a Seventh-day Adventist preacher. And the the drivel, the 25 points that comprise the Seventh-day Adventist Church. We devoted a better part of a month of programs to debunking each and every one of them, as well as the founder of the Seventh-day Adventist Church, who, Helen White, who is an absolute false prophet, demonic, in fact, in her insights. And yet this is what he is all about. Two statements that I read about him, because he really hasn't said anything of consequence on issues. The two things that I have read about him this morning, they were talking about his unique views. He has said that the Big Bang is a myth, and that so is evolution. And you just wonder, how can somebody have the education that is necessary to be a neurosurgeon and be that stupid? Are they saying that because they genuinely are that stupid, or are they playing to an audience that is that stupid? I mean, this article went on to say that in the Republican primary, among Republican voters, the dominant issue, the issue that outweighs all other issues, is religion. Are there enough Christian nutcases out there that actually believe that the universe is 6,000 years old? And that the Big Bang didn't happen? And that even though they have evidence beyond even questioning that evolution is a valid concept, he said that that Darwin's books, Darwin's theory on evolution, the origin of the species, was a work of the devil. Now, can you imagine a man like that being president of the United States? Now, mind you, there is no evidence whatsoever. In fact, all evidence is contrary to the concept of macroevolution, of non-life to the spontaneous generation of life to simple life becoming almost infinitely more complex. Everything in science, everything in archaeology, everything from a point of view of reason, the genome, all evidence is contrary. In fact, even Scientific American had to print a retraction on their, well, the impossible becomes possible given enough time, because we have learned with the Cambridge explosion, the Cambrian explosion, that we're dealing with a few million years, not billions of years, and within a time frame of a few million years, every life form, every animal body type came into existence simultaneously. And then scientists, recognizing this, came up with a new theory. They still needed infinite time to make the impossible seem possible, which was the theory of macroevolution. So they said, oh, well, you know, there's hundreds of billions of galaxies with hundreds of billions of stars that must have hundreds of billions of planets, and therefore that was on another planet around another star that had more time for life to be conceived from that which is inorganic, and that life rode in here on a speck of dirt and yet was not frozen nor died of lack of water nor lack of nourishment, nor lack of oxygen, and then when it, after its long journey of billions of years, managed to not be destroyed with the heat of entry into the Earth's atmosphere, nor the impact upon the Earth's surface, and somehow managed to populate life here. Now, of course, that's more insane than say that a tornado could go over a Kansas junkyard and produce a functional 747. But we have now learned, in fact, we just learned within the last month, what should have been obvious all along, that Earth is probably as old a planet that could ever exist in this universe that would have had the conditions suitable for life. And that is because you have to have a planet that has a surface comprised of heavier elements. You have to have a planet whereby there is an ample amount of carbon, and these heavier elements and carbon are actually created when a first generation star explodes. And then that carbon and other heavier elements can coalesce into a new solar system, one that is suitable for life, but you have to go through the entire process. And the conclusion is our sun, our solar system, our Earth is as old as they come in terms of suitable for life. So there is no macroevolution. And had he said that, that would have been sane. But to say that evolution at large is a myth and that the origin of the species was a demonically inspired book, I mean, you got religion bad at that point. And even to say that the Big Bang did not happen, that it was a myth, are you unaware of the cosmic microwave radiation that's still streaming out from it, that can be measured from it? Are you aware that if you were to read the book that you have corrupted with your New Testament, that you have poorly translated, that you have misnamed the Bible, and read the opening chapter of that book, and to find that Yahweh himself uses the term Big Bang in his creation account? It is it's astonishing that such a person could garner the lion's share of the Republican vote. But evidently, Republicans are motivated primarily by their religion. And all of these buffoons are equal when it comes to big military. Use that military around the world. Boy, what America needs to do is the very things that has made the world so vulnerable, so deadly, so destructive. So it is with that realization that I want to return to the proverb that we were considering, because God does provide us with an alternative, and he tells us that people will be like this, like these Republican candidates. And I'm not even sure it matters whether Trump or Carson prevail, because ultimately they're not going to prevail, although it would be entertaining, I suppose, against whoever wins the Democratic nomination, the socialist or the communist. And so it's going to be a massive turning point for America. You either got a couple of clowns who will be entertaining, or a couple of socialist slash communists that will be the final nail in America's coffin. So in that light, remember how for several days in a row I've said that the opening line that we considered of the sixth proverb, which spoke of his soul, and I said, you know, that his soul is really dealing with someone that Yahweh is identifying as a religious, political, military type leader, a societal leader, and understand that during the day that this was conveyed, it's very much like today in the sense that, but even more so, that the king was the head of the religion, that the king was presented as an emissary from God or a god himself, that the king was always the lead general in the nation's military. And so the head of the political infrastructure was the head of the military infrastructure, was the head of the religious infrastructure. And, of course, in their kingdom, just like in kingdoms today throughout the Islamic world, the kingdom existed as a private estate for the pleasure and benefit of the king. And this existed even through the emperor days, the Caesar days of Rome, for example. In fact, bit of my time last night as I was channel surfing between things. The History Channel, I believe it was presenting a documentary presentation on Rome and just how unbelievably repulsive they were in every possible way. Their use and abuse of slaves. Their extreme, extreme sexual perversions. Their fixation on the most exquisite tortures and watching those tortures up close and personal. You know, if a slave, for example, in one of their orgies and feasts were to break a goblet that, you know, they were deliberately and routinely drunk. So all of this reference that Yahweh has to inebriation is appropriate because they were routinely drunk. And if they dropped one of these goblets, and the goblets were passed around to be love goblets so that you could choose between the men and the women that you wanted to have a sexual exchange with, and they were drinking so much they had to vomit between what they were eating and what they were drinking so they could continue to eat and drink without it killing them. But if a slave were to drop one of their goblets, that they would have near them a pool of water that was filled with flesh-eating beasties of one type or another. Lampreys were one of their favorites. And they would throw the person in and keep them in while they were being devoured, eaten alive, slowly. And they would, the men and women would laugh and giggle and be entertained throughout the process. That's how repulsive the Romans are. And you ought to think of that if you're a Roman Catholic, because your church grew right out of that institution, taking all of its doctrines and proclivities right into their religious interpretations of these things. And so God is telling us that these leaders, these societal leaders, whether they are slick like the Obaminator with a slippery tongue where he certainly sounds good unless you know what he's talking about and you know that what he's saying is wholly untrue, deceptive. Or they're like Hadrian and they're just outright liars, but no one dare challenge them. Those that lead are usually very religious. And this is true of even today, that here in the Republican primary, the single most important factor is one's religion. And the openness they have of their religion, particularly amongst the most extreme Republicans, the evangelicals. In fact, it was interesting as I was watching this, the interplay between the news, printed news and the television news, one of the presidential hopefuls that had about 3% popularity was bemoaning, you know, looking at Trump and Ben Carson, neither of which have conservative credentials. You know, in fact, that Ben Carson was an independent in 2014. He has been a Republican for about a year, about the time that he's been running for office. Neither of these men have what you would have originally considered to be Republican ideals. But they're certainly presenting themselves as religious. So this is what Yahweh had to say. And I don't have all of 13, 14, and 15 translated for you, but just by sharing Proverbs 6:13, you're going to get the idea as to who Yahweh is talking about. He says, a wicked and worthless person. Bal-yal is the word for worthless. Adam is the word for person. And Bal-yal is a word that means vile and evil. Troublesome and abhorrent, detested and valueless, ungodly and unprofitable, destructive, and corrupt. It is from Bali, which means to be lacking, to be without, to be negated, to be for naught. To be old and worn out, completely used up, totally worthless. That such a person, and then he goes on to say, as well as an unjust, false, evil, and vain man. This is awon. You'll see it transliterated incorrectly, aveen, in many of your lexicons, because when I say incorrectly, there is no V in Hebrew. And there is a W in the actual printed word, and you don't change letters. The W conveys the O sound, so it'd be aon. This is a person who is wicked, egotistical, invalid, unreliable, corrupt, harmful, relationally damaging, untrue, fraudulent, and religious. This person is troublesome and idolatrous. It's indistinguishable from awen, which is written the same way, which is, as I shared with you a couple of days ago, it's a prominent Egyptian religious center. So, a wicked and worthless person, an unjust, false, and vain religious man, goes about promoting that which is perverse and corrupt in their speech. It is the outflow of information that comes from that which is rotten that God is the most concerned about. He wouldn't so much be bothered by the likes of Senator John McClown or the Abominator. He wouldn't be so much bothered by King George I or King George II and the father and son president. He wouldn't so much be irritated by Bill or Hillary Clinton if it were not for what they said. If they kept their mouths shut, he wouldn't have anything to say about them. He wouldn't know them. He wouldn't care about them. It's what we say that matters. It's what we say that God cares about. Particularly when individuals are wicked and worthless, when they are abhorrent and valueless, when they are destructive and corrupt, when they're vain, egotistical, invalid, unreliable, untrue, when they're religious. Such individuals is what God views as the source of really everything that is harmful. So many people are fixated in today's world wrongly on that they're going to get into heaven or avoid hell because they're good. And that's wrong. The person who is the best exemplar of not good is David Dode. And he most certainly is in heaven. Yahweh sees his upright and righteous. You see, the thing that matters is whether or not you're right, not whether you're good. Right matters. Good does not. Dode was right, which is why he was called righteous. To be right, one is the antithesis of vile, troublesome. They are the antithesis of unprofitable, corrupt, negated. To be right, they are the inverse of unreliable, harmful, fraudulent, and of course religious. It matters. It's not what you believe that matters. It's what you know. It isn't your belief that's going to make any difference. It's what you understand. and whether or not you have considered information that is accurate and have processed it correctly. What matters is, are you right? Not are you good? Now, typically, wrong will yield bad. And often, usually, right will produce good. Being right is good for you. Being wrong is bad for you. These things are true. But what God is saying here is if the person is not right, the speech that will flow from them will be incredibly, well, let's use his words, worthless, vile, troublesome, abhorrent, detestable, valueless, ungodly, unprofitable, destructive, and corrupt. If a person is wrong about their understanding of who God is, what he is offering, what he has said about himself, what he is providing on our behalf, then what they say will be relationally damaging, untrue, fraudulent, and religious in nature. The principal way that people go about conveying that which is worthless is that they ikashof. The Hebrew word for they pervert and corrupt the truth. They distort that which is true and provide a circuitous and serpentine path which veers from that which is right. It's from ikish. It means that they're crooked and twisted. They're perverted and perverse. They're warped and wayward. And deviant speech leads to a path which is twisted and perverted, perverse and warped, distorted and serpentine. And that is what God despises. That's what he cares about. You notice that in choosing the next president, the primaries are all based upon what is called debates. Now, they aren't debates because there's no topic being debated. They're short segment speeches. Short segment speeches. That's how Americans choose who's going to be their next president, whether it be on the Democratic side or the Republican side. They make short statements on certain topics, speeches. When they become president, the first thing they do is they give a really fancy speech called their inaugural address. When they are, each year, they go into the Capitol building and they give a State of the Union address, another speech. They look into the camera and give speeches to the American people every time there's a issue. It's all about our speech. When religious leaders get in front of their congregation, it's not what they do, it's what they say that causes all of the problems. They read from, recite from, the poison pen of Paul. And then they make statements that are twisted and corrupt. And if their twisted and corrupt statements weren't twisted, counterfeited, and corrupted from the source of truth, God wouldn't care. If you go off and you say that the universe was created by a jokester fighting a riddler, and that they got into an argument and they went off and created a universe based upon this, and I don't think God would even care. He'd just laugh at you. If you created a religion that said that a spaceship dropped a bunch of souls in a volcano, Scientology, I don't think God would care. If you came up with this plot that there was a tablet that was found someplace in the Americas that told this tall tale that only one individual could possibly translate, and you created a religion based upon that, Mormonism, God wouldn't give a hoot. But none of these religions were credible. For example, if you were to go into a cave and say that a dark, demented spirit beat you to a pulp to the point you wanted to commit suicide, that you knew you had been demon-possessed, and that you have a God by a different name, Allah, spending all of his time in hell torturing people, that was the same God as the Torah, when the opposite is true, had you just left it as there's an Arabian God that wants you to fight and kill for him, so that he can torture those that you send through their demise, that he wants you to terrorize the world so long as it doesn't submit to him. If they just left it at that, God wouldn't care. The problem is this idea of perversions and corruptions, twisting, distortions. Because every one of these religions, to be credible, chose to twist and corrupt Yahweh's testimony. That Christian New Testament, that Pauline rubbish, it claimed the credibility of the Messiah. He didn't know his proper title. He didn't know that he was Yahusha, didn't know his proper name, didn't use either of those, didn't use God's name, never quoted either of them accurately, Yahweh or his diminished manifestation, Yahusha. But he still claimed to speak for them. And if he hadn't made that claim, God wouldn't give two hoots about him, but he did. He claimed to be authorized by the God he was demeaning. That's why God says that's twisting. That's perversion. That's corrupting. God wouldn't care about Judaism, the rabbis, if it wasn't for the fact that they based their arguments upon his Torah, augmented his Torah, twisted his Torah. If they had just said, we're going to create a religion out of whole cloth, he would care as much about them as he cares about Zoroastrians and Hindus, which is, he doesn't. God doesn't have much to say about Hinduism or Zoroastrianism. He doesn't have much to say about those religions because those religions did not twist and distort what he had to say to gain credibility. Christianity, Islam, Judaism, Scientology, Mormonism, they all did. That's how they got to their credibility, was they twisted and perverted what God had to say. And from God's point of view, you don't get to play in that gray area. What he's saying, when you do that, you create a serpentine path that's wayward, that's valueless, that is totally perverse and corrupt and useless, wicked and evil. And so it is these politicians that claim to speak to a country governed by God. It's these soldiers that claim that they got their Bible stick, that God is on their side. It's these religious buffoons that claim that they are conveying the word of God, twisting who he is, corrupting his message, that God cares about. So he introduces the seven great evils, the seven abominations, by talking about religious and political, military, economic leaders. A wicked and worthless man. An unjust, false, evil, and vain individual goes about with corrupt and perverse speech. That's what they say. It's the warping and twisting of the truth that is so seductive that misleads so many. He then says, of these societal leaders, that they do so while winking, narrowing their eyes. You know that so many times I told you on this program that I looked at George W. Bush when he gave his speeches. I said, there's a twinkle in his eye. There's kind of an expression that he makes with his eyes when he's going about when he says something he knows isn't true. Like, Al-Qaeda is the reason that Saddam Hussein had embraced Al-Qaeda, which is why we had to attack Iraq. Talked about their weapons of mass destruction. You knew it wasn't true. He knew it wasn't true. You could see it in his eyes. And God says there, the narrowing of their eyes, the same thing is true of this Pope, Bergoglio, Pope Francis. You can see it in his eyes. Vominator's the same way. It's a telltale sign. That's why poker players, when they're bluffing, they have to wear glasses because there's always a tell in their eyes. Well, politicians aren't typically good poker players. Their eyes tell the tale. And Yahweh says, their narrowing of their eyes while they're speaking to you should be a sign to you. He speaks of them shuffling their feet. The shuffling of their feet, ma'al, is from the Hebrew meaning to communicate and signal by scraping, making nonverbal signs by subtly rubbing one's feet. You know, Jacob became Jacob because he dug in his heels. He walked forthrightly along that narrow path, straight path, heel to toe, straight ahead. Well, the societal leaders, those who speak lies, who pervert and corrupt the truth, they're not only winking, they don't have a tell in their eyes, their feet are shuffling, they're not walking the straight path. No, they're moving side to side. Trying to, advert being caught, being found, being solidly in one place. Like in this program, we're solidly in one place. We never leave the Torah, prophets, and Psalms. That's where we are. That's where our feet are planted. We stand upright, firmly established in the Torah, prophets, and Psalms, but not the shifty individual. They're shifty. Their feet are always moving. They have a tell in their eyes, he says. And what's the third thing that God says is a sign to recognize the person whose speech is twisted and perverted, perverse and warped, wayward and deviant? What does almost every politician do? What does almost every religious pastor do? They point their finger. He says these same individuals, the third telling sign, beyond the narrowing and the winking of the eyes, the tell of the eyes, the shuffling of the feet, is the pointing of fingers. You know that old line that if you're pointing your finger, you typically have three pointing back at you. I always say of those who are accusing others of malignant characteristics, that they need to look in a mirror. They would find that what they're saying of someone else is less true of the person they're attacking than it is of them. And such is the case with our politicians. So I think never more so than the Abominator. He may be the absolute embodiment of this. Winking with his eyes, shuffling with his feet, pointing the finger, while professing that which is corrupt and perverse. So it's that kind of a soul that Yahweh says is an abomination, because that kind of soul is doing the one thing that God hates the most, misleading. When Yahweh delineated his 10 statements, that presentation had three on one tablet and seven on the other. And the three that were on the first of those two tablets, a paraphrase goes something like this. I am Yahweh. I am God. I am the one and only God. I am the God who delivered you from slavery and that crucible of human oppression, of religious and political oppression. You will not continue to exist with any other God in my presence. You ought not be religious. Don't make religious symbols. Don't bow down and pray in religious venues. Don't serve religious individuals or religious institutions. Don't be caught in and or around them. For the truth is that fathers corrupt their own children in this way to the third and fourth generation. But those who receive my mercy do so by closely examining and carefully considering the instructions and terms associated with my covenant relationship. The third addresses this specific issue, along with also the first two, of course, do it as well. But the third just says, do not negate the merits of my name. Do not promote that which is lifeless and deceitful and destructive in my name. Because those who negate the importance of my name, those who promote that which is lifeless and valueless and deceitful and destructive in my name, I will not forgive. It is against those three instructions that we find Yahweh delineating the seven things that he abhors the most. The seven abominations that can be associated with a human soul. Six of these things, God says, I hate, I detest them. But all seven are an abomination to a soul. With that, let's recommence with behold, presently, now, at the present time, pay attention. There are six things Yahweh hates. That he abhors, he detests, he loathes, and considers adversarial. And seven that are an abomination to his soul. This is the soul of the man who shuffles his sphinx, winks his eyes, points his finger, while engaged in twisted and perverted speech, all based upon that individual themselves being wicked and corrupt. So there are six things that God hates, which means God isn't all love, which means God isn't all loving, which means that since God is loving, and since God loves his children, to be loving, one must also hate. To be like God, one must hate. It is the point I've tried to make so many times on this program that if you do not hate that which incites people to kidnap little girls and turn them into sex slaves, to kidnap little boys and to sodomize them, to commit acts of mass murder, to torture, to enslave, to terrorize, if you do not hate the source of 99.9% of the terrorist acts perpetrated in the world today, then there's something wrong with you. You can't be a loving individual and not hate that which is overtly destructive. In this case, I'm speaking of Islam. But it isn't the only thing that you ought to hate. But you ought to hate it. If you don't hate it, then you aren't loving. God didn't say there are six things that I tolerate. No, he hates them. He despises them. It is the antithesis of political correctness. It's one of the reasons that to be politically correct is to be wrong. Then he lists these things. We have been through much of this list, but let's go through it again. Haughty eyes and visions of grandeur, observations, including a rebellious perspective. Who looked upon the Most High and thought themselves, raised their perspective, their eyes above him, and said, I'm greater. I want to be worshipped as if I were God. Satan. You ever see the pictures, as they are the sculptures of the leaders of society, when they paint a leader? Oh, their lives, eyes are always uplifted. They're looking to the horizon and beyond. Yeah, that's the uplifted eye, the visions of grandeur, this attitude that is self-exalting, that is in the displays of one's religious and political heroes, the defiant view, a proud outward appearance, arrogance, an improper perspective or understanding. This is what God says is hateful, that he hates. It's an abomination to one's soul. But this follows immediately with a deceptive tongue. One flows from the other. But a false and misleading speechmaker, rhetoric which leads to mistaken beliefs, is a hated abomination.